The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan, and you found the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. All the usual ingredients to come, but we're dedicating most of this show to an old friend of the pod, Jeff Lloyd. Since he left Absolute Radio, where he'd been on air for nearly 20 years, including on the first incarnation of its predecessor, Virgin Radio, Jeff has turned himself into a celebrated and highly successful podcaster. In his loft in North London, he makes a podcast with his former Absolute co-host, Annabelle Port, where they basically chat about each other's feelings of social inadequacy. He's also launched the chart-topping, no seriously, Reasons to be Cheerful with former Labour leader Ed Miliband. And now he's back on air with what sounds like a podcast that's being broadcast on Union Jack. It's a new interview format. So, Jeff Lloyd, live in the loft after this clip.
Hello.
Hello.
So, you've been getting out and about, haven't you?
Yeah.
I woke up on Saturday morning and there you were on Five Live.
I know. So I was covering for Danny Baker and it was sort of a last minute thing.
Nice to hear your dulcet tones on a Saturday morning.
Ed rang me and said it was a bit like finding your partner in bed with somebody else.
And you've launched another podcast.
We mentioned this last week. It's not a podcast. It's a radio interview show that is also
well, it's
a
certainly
podcast.
Being advertised on the social media feed that I see as a podcast.
Then you know, people are welcome to download it as a podcast. But
three podcast Lloyd.
That's me. Yeah, I'm flooding the market.
Yeah, no, it's good.
That's my
the more
plan.
Of you, the better.
And you've been all over the media. Is your GQ thing out now?
I think it is out. I think
your fashion spread.
There's a video of it coming out at some point, but I think the interview is out with Alistair Campbell. Yeah.
Did he give you a hard time?
No, it was fine. It was a nice chatteroo.
A chatteroo?
Yeah.
If you ever you want to launch another podcast, I think Chatteroo with Ed Miliband could be the title.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
So this is my reason to be cheerful. I'm sitting in Ed Miliband's chair, aren't I?
You are. I've got a Dymo label maker. And I don't know why they're over my side of the desk, but I even printed out a little Ed sign for his headphones.
Ed's cans.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So this is where you do all your podcasts, Jeff?
It is. Yeah, this is the loft of my house. My wife says that this she feels that she's done a good job of keeping it tasteful downstairs. And she says by the time you get up to the loft, it looks like a teenager's bedroom.
Oh, I don't think that's quite right. I like the Paul McCartney style bass down there.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for saying style, because, I mean, it is a dead cheap knockoff. Yeah. Somebody told me that you can buy, you know, so if you buy one of these knockoff guitars, which I can't play, by the way, you can buy transfers online with the proper, you know, manufacturer. So I'm looking for a Hofner transfer if anybody knows where to get one.
All right. So I asked you if you'd come on this pod some months ago, and you said no, and now you said yes. Now, is that because you were a bit nervous about how your new career as a podcaster would go?
No, it was. I'll tell you what it really is. I think it's difficult to come on things like this and not sound self-serious. Do you know what I mean?
I'll do my best.
No, but I mean, like, who cares? Like, I feel like that whenever anybody wants me to do anything, I just think, oh, the regular listeners are going to hate it. They're going to be annoyed at him for asking me on. I'm not going to be interesting. So those are my usual reasons for saying no to
anything. I wondered if it was because actually you feel more comfortable asking the questions.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like that socially as well.
Yeah, well, I was absolutely. I noticed that when I arrived, because you took me for a cup of tea downstairs and you didn't tell me anything about you at all. You just asked me things about me.
Yeah. And it is a just thing. Who cares about me, really? I don't know what that says about my self-esteem.
Well, we do. So tell me about how you feel now you've been out of it for a while about not having a regular live radio show.
So I finished the radio show in April of last year, and in about June of last year, my wife said to me, oh, so this is what you're like when you're happy then. Which, you know, is a bit of a flippant thing to say, because I was doing a job that I'd always wanted to do since I was 14. I wanted to be on the radio, and I was on the radio every day, which was this great privilege. And I was kind of left to my own devices, which, again, you know, hardly anybody gets that luxury. But I'd just been there too long. You know, I'd been at Absolute and then Virgin before it for 18 years. And the last 3 years, I was just antsy, you know. And again, I think this perhaps I'm ungrateful or whatever, but like the last couple of years, I felt like I was scratching marks on a prison wall. I just wanted to get out and do something different.
And were you waiting for another radio show from somewhere else?
No. So what my idea was to get a few different plates spinning, which I'm still sort of working on, really. The podcasts were part of that. And then I've done some bits of radio filling in here and there that I've enjoyed. I'd like to do a bit more of that. And I've done some things which aren't radio or audio related at all, which I'm quite enjoying as well. So, you know, if I can get to a point where I've got 5 or 6 different things, which are all bringing in a bit of money, that would feel good to me. And, you know, maybe in the mix of that, a radio show, like a weekly or, you know, a couple of shows at a weekend. But I'm not itching to get back on the radio every day.
Well, tell us about the reasons to be cheerful that you do, as we were saying, with Ed Miliband. And the story goes that you met when you interviewed him during the general election campaign in 2015, when he was the Labour leader, and you liked each other. How did it work that... I mean, did you just ring him up out of the blue and
kind
say,
of,
hi, Jeff
yeah.
here, fancy kind doing a pod?
Kind of. So I had heard that one of Ed's advisors is a guy called Stuart Wood, now Lord Wood of Anfield, and I'd heard that he liked the radio show and he was in some way instrumental in getting Ed to do the show. So when I was thinking about leaving Absolute, I thought, OK, I want to do podcasts. I had, you know, loads of ideas, some of which haven't come to fruition, some of which never will. But one of them was... just thinking about Trump, Brexit, if perhaps you're progressively minded, at that point, a general election seemed a long way off. And furthermore, if you're progressively minded, the Labour Party especially looked like they didn't have any good electoral prospects. So I thought, because I'm not a sports fan, I don't support a football team or anything, so I can get a bit like that about current affairs or politics. And I thought, well, if you haven't got a team to support in a certain way, then what are the ideas that are knocking about? And that was the starting point of it. And I just really liked Ed when he came on the radio show, and I thought he must be hearing ideas all the time. You know, he's a policy wonk for Gordon Brown for all those years and as leader of the Labour Party. So I just wrote... this Stuart Wood an email saying, hey, I've got this idea, do you think Ed would be interested? And he said, oh, it's a good idea, I'll forward it on to him. And within a couple of days, this was back when I was still at Absolute, Ed got in touch and said, oh, come round. So I went round and we talked about the idea and we were both really up for it. So I finished the radio show, went away for a bit, and then we were going to start when I came back, and then they called a general election. So he was busy campaigning. And I dropped the ball on it a little bit, because in those first few months after leaving Absolute, I perhaps unwisely treated it like I was retired, you know, that I didn't have to work, because I'd set aside some savings for the first year or so. So I wasn't that diligent at following up on meetings and things. And then he did his Radio 2 fill-in and really enjoyed it.
And he was very good on it, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was really good. He was really good. And then he sort of picked up the ball on it again.
In some ways, I think it's such a good example of what you can do in podcasting that you can't really do, or at least we've been told you can't really do in broadcasting. I mean, actually now, I could imagine it as a radio show. Although,
yeah.
Would he be the same person if he was being on the radio? I guess he might be. I think you've done a fantastic media training job on Ed. And he was on the radio, wasn't he, last week,
yeah.
somewhere, talking about how he thought he'd got better as a communicator because he'd been doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, so he will say that he had almost like a 6-second delay in his head when he was leader, that everything he said could be taken out of context and made into a headline. And even somewhat recently, he was on Nick Robinson's podcast. And towards the end of the interview, Nick Robinson said to him, so Ed, what was Arnold Schwarzenegger's catchphrase, you know, in The Terminator? So Ed goes, I'll be back. And then the BBC website run a story which says, I'll be back,
yes.
says Ed Miliband, plotting a return to frontline politics, question mark. And, you know, that's now as a backbench MP with a podcast. So when you're leader, I think it's very difficult. And actually, when he came on the radio show that time, so I had him on, I had, Cameron didn't want to do it, so we had William Hague on, had Farage on, and we were due to have Nick Clegg on, but I was on holiday, so somebody else did him. And I'd seen Ed speak at events, like I'd been to events, and I'd seen him with members of the public, and he was really funny and natural. And I felt that when I was seeing him on Newsnight or whatever, he wasn't coming across like that. And I do think part of it is just because when politicians go on those shows, their role has already been cast, if
I
you
think
like.
That's right, isn't it?
So, yeah. You know, we're going to speak to Ed Miliband like he's this geek who can't speak human, when he is this geek who's actually really good at speaking human, but he never really had the wiggle room to do
and
that.
And the interviewer's job, which is something you don't do, though you love doing interviews, the interviewer's job in those kind of adversarial political interviews is to trip up
yes.
the person. So that's why they're on the defensive.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, and then at the other end of the spectrum, you get Theresa May interviewed, I don't know, was it the one show where she's talking about running through the cornfield? Yeah, yeah. There's...
She's strong and stable. Have you noticed how virtually every sentence that she uses in answer to a question starts with the word what? She always says, what I am saying is...
I do feel sorry, like having been on the radio for years and then you hear yourself back and you always have some awful verbal tick. And as soon as, it's like whack-a-mole, as soon as you're not one down, another one pops up. So I do feel sorry for anybody who has those things. But you'd have thought someone would be advising her.
Well, what I'm going to say now is tell me about Adrift and why you decided to reunite with Annabelle and do a podcast with her.
So that was always part of the plan. So I just really love working with Annabelle. I think she's so clever and so funny. And we had part, this sounds a bit soppy really, but part of the way I found my own enjoyment in those last couple of years at Absolute was by really sort of going back to the podcast listeners, because there was a hardcore of a few thousand people who downloaded that show every day. And they're the ones who are really engaged. So I thought, you know, I'll make it interesting for myself by doing more for those people. And then when we were stopping the radio show, it was always my intention just to do something for them and see if we could grow it beyond them, which we have. I mean, it gets so many more listeners than the Absolute podcasted, you know, largely because it's not on the radio, so it's the only place to find it.
Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Hello.
Hi.
And happy birthday.
Thank you.
I have in my bag here a lovely card from you. What would you like me to write in it?
Oh. Okay, shall I dictate something?
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Let's get it out of the wrapper here. Don't look at it.
Oh, it's from Liberty. Nice, is that from Liberty? Jeff, yes. £4.95? That's cheap for Liberty.
I said, give me your cheapest card. What would you like me to write?
Okay, dear Annabelle.
Yeah.
And then in brackets, my greatest friend.
Yeah.
And I much prefer you to my other podcast co-host, Ed Miliband.
Broadcast Bionics, solutions for radio, sponsors the Radio Today programme.
I remember when I was 15, I used to go into Piccadilly Radio and answer the phones. And Terry Christian was one of the DJs there. And it was just as the Manchester scene was blowing up. And Terry's like this combative person anyway. And he'd be constantly ranting about how his show didn't get the attention it deserved from management. And look at how many letters I get. You know, I must have, none of the other DJs get this many letters, so I must have more listeners. And of course, that isn't true. Like, but what it is those people are more engaged in what you're doing than the people who've got the radio on as background noise. So that was the thinking with doing the podcast with Annabelle, really. Just trying to do something for those people while I figured out what to do next.
Is the show, do you think, better because it doesn't have music? And in fact, is the Jeff Lloyd brand better because it isn't interrupted by records?
I don't know. So I think for the people who really... So the great thing I've found from doing podcasts is you're just doing a show for people who really like it. So you don't have to worry about irritating people to some extent, where if you're doing what I was doing on Absolute, which was quite a speech heavy show on a music station, you always feel like you're trying to, you know, do something that you would want to listen to and trying not to annoy people too much at the same time. So almost, and that radio station would go through different phases over the years, where sometimes I felt like I was right in the middle of it and the listeners were there for the ride, and then other times I felt like what that radio station was doing was so different to my show that I would be annoyed if I was a regular listener, you know. I'm thinking, God, why have they got this on interrupting the stereophonics?
Well, the other liberating thing about the podcast is that you don't have any of the radio furniture. You don't have the news and the travel and the weather and all these junctions that you've got to hit and the ads and all that kind of stuff. That must also give you a sense of freedom. There aren't any constraints.
Yeah, so my favourite thing I ever did on Virgin, so after me and Pete Mitchell finished the breakfast show, I did the late night show, which was great. It was four nights a week. It was Monday to Thursday. So I had all Friday, all Saturday, all Sunday, and most of Monday off, which was lovely. That's a good work-life balance. And that was my favourite radio show that I'd ever done, because I think I've told you this before, but when I grew up and I first started listening to the radio, I used to listen to James H. Reeve on Piccadilly Radio in Manchester. And if people have never heard him, he is a raconteur. I mean, I think Jim can be a handful if you're management, but he was this brilliant storyteller, very dry, very funny, the opposite of most of the phone-in hosts who are kind of string them up, send them back. He's very thoughtful. And like, he would read out letters from listeners and they'd be full of in-jokes that you'd only really understand if you listened to the programme. And they'd be written brilliantly in the style of the show, and Frank Sidebottom would be on it. And then the point being, it, you felt like you were part of a club listening to it. And I think on radio, late night is the time when you can create that more than any other time. So a breakfast show is really exciting to do, because you're right in the middle of things and you know, it's the slot. But in terms of enjoyment and that thing of listeners engaging with it, late night radio was always my favourite. And podcasts are like that, but more so, because everybody, it's more intimate, you know, you're literally usually on somebody's headphones and they're listening to it, and it's that thing again of it not being background noise.
And like you say, they are the people who've elected to listen to it in the first place. Yeah. So you know that you're broadcasting in the same way that if you were a rock band, you're playing to your fans.
Yeah, exactly.
You walk
yeah.
out on stage, it's not full of yeah. thousands of people who are looking the other way and are not
and,
very
and you see it in the email you get as well, because doing a radio show, I don't know, if, you know, get 100 email in a show, email messages in a show or whatever, and you sift through them for the good ones. Whereas doing this podcast, maybe the amount of email is lower, but it's all really good and it's all really well written. You sense this embarrassment of riches.
So let's have a quick listen to your other new project, which is on Union Jack. I recorded this morning.
We grew up in a part of Nottingham called Snenton. It was 5 Robert Street.
5 Robert Street. Snenton. And we'll see if we can get it on the screen.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Let's see if we can...
Yeah, so look, it's like Coronation Street.
It is. It's those northern two up, two down, red brick.
Oh, my God. So it's...
And they've moved to wheelie bins now, which I'm guessing they didn't have when you were a kid.
We did not have wheelie bins. Yeah. So you're, basically, what I don't know if you can tell from there, but your front door opens right onto the street.
Yeah.
Oddly... can you see that at the top of the road? There's a windmill.
It looks like there's a dead dog.
There's a dead dog.
On Google Street
View. I think I killed that dog. I can't believe it's still there. The most surreal thing is that in the middle of this inner city area, which when I was there was hard, and there's a windmill. In the middle of inner city Nottingham, there's a windmill, Green's Mill. This is incredible.
We're now looking up. What would you call that alleyway at the side of the house? Is there a word in Nottingham for that?
Well, I don't know. That's not a twitchel, is it?
A twitching, you see. We have a word ginnel.
A ginnel, that's
slightly
more
further north.
But the thing is...
So that's you, Matt Ford, some Google Maps of Nottingham, where he comes from. And the story's called Hometown Glory, and it's you going virtually around these places where comedians come from.
Yeah, so it's an idea I'd had knocking around for a few years, and I'd pitched it a few times as a TV idea, not necessarily with me hosting it, and it had never got anywhere. And then when I was finishing that Absolute, it was lovely, lots of people wanted to talk, and Jack are basically the people who set up Absolute, and they're just the best people. Clive Dickens, I think, is a genius. Donna O'Driscoll is, it was just wonderful people to work for. And that time, there are two times really in my 18 years there. One was when I started, Chris Evans owned the radio station, and it was nuts. And you know, I came down from up north and I'd listened to Chris Evans on the radio growing up, and then all of a sudden you're in the middle of it and he's on the front of the papers every day, and you know, he'd send an email around saying Chris has bought a new shirt, everyone to the pub, and then, you know, work would stop for the day and his credit card would be behind the bar, and all these like insane things would happen. So I mean, it was unsustainable. Like I had to stop drinking as a result of that sort of hedonism. But that was an exciting time. And then the other exciting time was when the Absolute lot came in. Sort of Virgin had been run into the ground, and I was about to leave, actually. I'd been offered a breakfast show somewhere else, and Clive persuaded me to stay. And basically the idea was that they were going to treat it like a startup. So they got these Indian backers, the Times of India, and they were going to think, not what's radio been like for the past 40 years, but if we were doing it again from scratch, you know, what would we do? And that was really exciting. And there was this, not quite a year, where it felt like, oh my God, they're going to sort of change commercial radio forever. And then a couple of things happened. There was the financial crash, and Absolute Vodka came along and said, we don't like using that word Absolute so much. And that made the Times of India people a bit nervous, and they sort of pulled the rug. But I just loved working with that company. So when I said I was leaving Absolute, they got in touch with me and said, do you want to come and do something for us? I said, I really don't want to do a music radio show for a while, but I've got loads of ideas. So if you want to talk about those, then let's have a cup of coffee. And we did, and they were dead keen for me to do something. So it's an interview show. And yeah, I'm enjoying it. They're a really lovely team. There's a guy called Giles Gear who runs it. I think he's the content director, as they call him now. And he's just so enthusiastic and so switched on. And I think he's produced it up in a nice way.
It's example of what's becoming a theme, really, for you, which is, it's basically an interview, but it isn't, because it's got this really clever format.
Right.
And I don't, frankly, want to listen to an interview with Matt Ford that much. But Matt Ford talks about a particular street where he was brought up and, you know, points at Snenton Mill and all the rest of it. That's really much, much more interesting and vivid, and draws him in a way that he never would be just in a straight one-to-one interview.
Yeah, well, I'd noticed that if I ever went to my hometown with my wife, or if we ever went to her hometown, all she wants to do is borrow a parent's car and drive around and show me where this happened and that happened. And I just thought, oh, there's probably
this a show. This is Chicago, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, she's allowed to do that. Yeah. Where's your hometown?
Macclesfield, which is less interesting. I can show where Ian Curtis hung himself, but it's a bit macabre.
That's not good. No. You can show where Alan Green lives, but you probably don't know who Alan Green is.
I don't. I'm guessing it's Sporting.
Football commentator.
Oh, really? Yes. He lives in Macclesfield?
I think he still does.
Uh-huh. Brian Redhead lived near Macclesfield. He was in Bollington, just outside Macclesfield, for many years, yeah.
These and other interesting facts are available. So you mentioned doing a bit of depping. I heard you on the Danny Baker show. Supply teacher at BBC.
Yeah. Well, I thought Danny always has these amazing email addresses like lord.reith and margaret.rutherford. So what can I ask for? And because they're used for, you know, Chris Addison, the comedian, and myself, years and years ago, Chris Evans walked out of TFI Friday. So basically he'd got into his argument with the Scottish media group, didn't want to do it anymore, but there were still a few more episodes to run. So they decided to do it with guest hosts, because Ginger Media was all part of Virgin Radio and they knew me. They asked me if I'd write it. I said, oh, can I get my friend to do it with me? And it's Chris Addison, the comedian. And it spoilt me. I've never really enjoyed writing television since, because Chris and Danny were so used to kind of steamrolling the way through and getting whatever they wanted, no matter how expensive it was, no matter how expensive some throwaway joke that two people would notice was. it got done. So we wrote on this show, and I mean, it was so indulgent, really, but it was such fun. And doing Danny's shows a bit like that, they're so used to him and his big old brain. And you can say, can I have the email address supply.teacher@bbc.co.uk, please? And yeah, it just happens like that, which, can you imagine going in, you know, to another show and asking for that? It just wouldn't happen, would it?
So what have you learned about yourself doing podcasts? What have you learned about what you enjoy and what you're best at?
I have learned that a producer is such a luxury. Because on a drift, I do this thing called The Incident, where I put an episode from my life under the microscope every week, like some kind of awkward social interaction. This week, for example, I went to my parents' house this weekend and I noticed that my mum has one photograph of me up in the entire house, like one photo. And it's a terrible photo. It's from like the depths of my alcoholism. And so I'm going around the house just doing a bit of counting. She's got five photographs of the dead dog. So that's, you know, that's what I'll use for this week's episode. And for the first, I don't know, 15, 20 episodes, I would then get three guests to give me their take on it. And it might be a comedian or it might be a psychologist or, you know, and just the process of ringing people up and the herding cat saying, are you around to record at this time on the phone? And
well, hang on a minute then. So you don't really want a producer, you want a researcher.
Right, yeah.
Because I thought surely he doesn't want somebody to tell him what to do.
No, this is very true. Yeah, that's very true. But
so you want a gopher?
Yeah, and I just hate mithering people for favours as well. It makes me want to die. And so Greg Davis is doing it this week, and I'm just slowly exhausting my Rolodex, and I think no one's going to speak to me anymore. When I was in Manchester, there was a friend of mine, Patrick, and he's a mobile DJ and he does karaoke nights. And two or three times a year, you'd get the phone call to, would you be the guest judge on his karaoke final? And I just think, like, everybody I know in my phone book sees me ringing and think, oh God, he's going to ask me some of that bloody podcast.
Do people, though, know what they are now? I mean, that would seem to me to be the story of 2018. Everybody knows what a podcast is now.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain what the zeitgeist is.
No, it must have reached some kind of critical mass because my mum listens to the podcasts and she never listened to the radio show even. So I don't know. I mean, it could just have coincided with her retirement and it does make up a little bit for the photos.
And because of that and because of the success of yours, you're now making some money.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hearing adverts on your pods.
Yes.
Now, that's all good news, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so...
And are you sourcing those, or do they come in through Acast or...
We signed up with Acast, yeah. Just because, I mean, I have enough trouble asking my friends to give me a five-minute phone call for the podcast. I don't want to be asking people for money. But on the drift, actually, we do ask people for donations, which is its own hell. But we're very lucky. You know, I guess we make a similar amount out of a drift that we would for doing a weekly sort of weekend show somewhere half decent.
Well, that's progress.
Yeah.
I suspect that wouldn't have happened a year or so ago.
No. And the asking for money, so Annabelle was on maternity leave for a few months towards the end of last year, and I recorded a bunch with guest hosts. And I was in Chicago for Thanksgiving, so I got in touch with the host of one of their popular podcasts that they make at WBEZ. And I went in their studios and I recorded with her and she was really good. But she did the begging for
they
me.
They know how to
and,
do
oh,
it,
my, they? They're so great at pushing the buttons. I'm so apologetic. And no, there was none of that. It's more like, well, we give you enjoy this. You spend time with this podcast every week and that's got to be worth something. I mean, the hustle, it's amazing. I wish I had the bit of that.
Well, it's been lovely to see the loft.
Thank you. You've not even seen the Japanese toilet yet, have you?
I haven't, no, but I'm hoping to go in a moment.
Take your time.
Merely to see it. So my other reason to be cheerful is this is the last of these podcasts I'm doing.
Why?
Because...
have you got a gig somewhere?
No, I've got a bit busy. So Stu Clarkson's going to put it together. I'm still going to turn up as a contributor and an interviewer, but you're my last big moment. You're my last hurrah.
I'm flattered. As the producer, I'm so flattered,
of the Radio Today programme. Isn't that exciting?
Well, it's been an honour.
The honour's been entirely
mine. We've run it into the ground.
You have. So you can now say, let's have the news with Stu Clarkson.
Let's have the news with Stu Clarkson.
Very good.
Thank you, Jeff. This week, switchover is starting. Bauer has announced that the Aberdeen station North Sound 2 is going to turn off its analogue transmitter and go digital only. There's going to be a series of industry events from the 14th to the 19th of May, all under the banner Radio Audio Week. It'll bring together the Radio Academy's Radio Festival with Radio Centre's Tuning In Conference, as well as the IAB's Sound Investment Seminar and the British Podcast Awards. Another Key 103 name is joining BBC Radio Manchester. Newsreader Paul Lockett, who's been at Key for well over 25 years, will join former colleague Chelsea Norris on the Radio Manchester Breakfast Show team from next month. She starts the show next week. Bruno Brooks has been back on air at BBC Radio Stoke as it celebrated 50 years on the air this week. He started out at the station before moving to Radio 1. Bruno has been a guest with Liz and John at breakfast to talk about his time there. A new podcast out from Classic FM this week. It brings together classical music and true crime stories. Case Notes is hosted by breakfast presenter Tim Leoru. Topics include Haydn's missing head, the mystery of Tchaikovsky's death, and the stolen Stradivarius. And well done to Christian O'Connell, picking up another award this week ahead of his departure to Australia. His Absolute Radio Breakfast Show was named Best Radio Programme at the Trick Awards at the Grosvenor House on Park Lane this week. Radio 2's Dermot O'Leary won Best Radio Personality, and Desert Island Discs was the winner of the Best Podcast Award, a new one this year at Trick. You can catch up on other stories you might have missed this week at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stuart, and good luck with the production work. And by the way, Jeff Lloyd and Ed Miliband will be at Radio Days Europe next weekend. So if you're in Vienna for that, I recommend a session with the new Mike and Bernie. David Lloyd after this.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
Radio Moments.
Happy 16th anniversary this week to a BBC national service. And it had been a long time since the corporation had launched a new music station.
Now, there's a new kind of music station.
The first BBC music station in 32 years.
This isn't just music. This is Six Music
from the BBC.
Good morning, it's Monday, the 11th of March 2002, and you are listening to Six Music from the BBC. My name is Phil Jupitus. I'll be your host for the next year. How are you doing? As you probably know, we've been having something of a vote on the internet for the first record to be played on Six Music, and you're probably wondering, Phil, who's won?
BBC Six Music, which launched this week in 2002, codenamed Network Y. 8 years later, though, it had problems, according to the DG.
The trouble with Six Music, it's been a really good and actually rather distinctive service from the BBC, and I know it's got, and I'm sure I'm going to be hearing, comments from some of its very loyal listeners. The problem with Six Music is it's quite a small audience currently, therefore it's not a station which makes much sense from a value for money point of view. If we built that audience up, the danger is you run absolutely headlong into mainstream commercial radio.
Very interesting point there about value for money, because the cost per listening hour for Six Music currently is less than for Radio 1, 1 Extra, 3, 4, 4 Extra, 5 Live, Sports Extra, Local Radio or the Asian Network. Anyway, the Trust told the BBC it didn't agree with its findings, and the station was saved.
The BBC Trust has rejected the BBC's plans to close Six Music. In his initial response to the Director General's strategy review, the chairman of the Trust, which represents the interests of licence fee payers, says that the case for the closure of Six has not been made. And of course, we want to say a huge thank you to all of you for all of the incredible support you've given us and for telling the Trust exactly how you feel, because they've obviously heard you.
Lauren Laverne on Six Music, which opened 15 years ago this week. He celebrates his 70th birthday this week and is one of the commercial radio industry's leading lights still to this day.
And down at 17 on the 242 Smart Charts Week, it's a big 242 spin across the day. Welcome with me, Richard Park, to John Walker.
And at 5-1, we go to the lunchtime sports stands to join Hugh Evans of The Scotsman. Welcome back, Hugh.
Welcome back to you too, Richard.
Richard Park, heard there on the Pirate Radio Scotland and then on Radio Clyde. He arrived in London to take Capital to great heights, leaving in 2001 to programme Magic, and then returned to found Global Radio. Few would argue that Richard is one of the UK's leading programmers of all time.
I remember Parky once, someone wanted to play some song.
whatever, I can't remember what. I think it was John Sachs in the early days of Capital Radio wanted to play something. And in one of those inimitable parts, they were having an argument across the office, right, where we all were. All these jocks around this, secretaries were and producers in the middle, and all the jocks had offices around the outside. Parky had a bigger office, and they're having a row about a proper row, you know. And he was doing something, and Parky said, "Hey, if you want, John, you can play that song. Just play it at home on your own." He said, "On your own CD player, don't play it on my radio station." You know, he kind of, and we were like, "Oh, hi, take cover, shit."
I think Richard Park is the most impressive person I've ever worked with and worked for in radio. And I've worked with some incredible people, but I just found him so, he was so supportive and so, you know, he gave me the freedom to go on and be creative. And as hard as it may be for some people to believe, we never had a cross word. And by this time, I'd heard all the stories about Richard. Well, it wasn't the Richard Park that I knew. You know, and I only speak the way I find, and I just found him, you know, I mean, if he hadn't have been my boss, he could have been one of my best friends. You know,
as a boss, Richard, for me, was brilliant. I hardly had any run-ins with him, and I remember if I did have a run-in with him, he would be quite fair and say to me, "I'm not often wrong." And I would say, "Well, yeah, you're right." And he wasn't often wrong.
Pat Sharp, Steve Penk and Neil Fox on Richard Park, who's 70 this week. 1999 now, and this week saw the death of Adrian Love, known for his time at Capital, LBC and Radio 1. It's me.
And your voice for the 1 o'clock news, Adrian Love. Good afternoon. Rhodesia, Mr. Ian Smith and the Commonwealth Secretary, Mr. Bowden.
LBC 97.3 stereo, where news comes first.
Right on, right on, right on. 8 minutes past 11. Nightline. We are going to open the lines.
Adrian Love, who died this week in 1999. His father was Jeff Love, of course. LBC is now sitting on more than 2 million listeners. Its Drive programme changed hands this week 5 years ago. Ian Dale took the helm, and here he is just before that change with Anjum Chowdhury.
But you see, this is why you give Islam. Would you mind letting me get a word in edgeways?
Well, let me ask you a question. No. Do you love Sheikh Osama bin Laden?
No, I clearly don't love him.
What, do you hate him? Well, do you think that he was a good man?
I think he was an evil man. What do you think?
Yeah, so you hate him then, don't you?
Right. Well, you think he's a hero. 99% of Muslims in this country, probably more
you're
than
wrong,
that,
actually.
Think
you're
Osama
wrong,
bin
wrong.
Laden was an evil man, and you give Islam a bad name with your hateful...
Ian Dale, who began his successful stint on LBC Drive this week in 2013. 15 years ago now, and a new station opened on the Atlantic 252 frequency. It was called Team Talk, but it only lasted 5 months.
Less than 40 seconds remaining in the life of Team Talk 252.
It's very tragic, isn't it?
It is, but we're heartened by the fact that senior management have told us that they'll do everything they can, and they're off on holiday. And I'd just like to say that this is Neil Henderson saying the following. It was, when was it? 17th of March, that it was my pleasure and privilege to introduce Team Talk 252, your non-stop sports radio station.
Shall I play a jingle?
It hasn't quite lived up to that reputation because it is now your completely stopped sports radio station. So, my dad always used to say, don't start something you can't finish. And he'd be proud of me now.
Team Talk 252, which launched this week in 2002. So, with Jack becoming Bob in the home counties this week 4 years ago...
Welcome to Bob FM.
Bob FM.
Downtown Radio launching in Belfast 42 years ago.
So much more music and the friendliest people here on 293. Downtown.
And the BBC making the first broadcast from the enlarged broadcasting house with a transmission by the Burmese section of the World Service 6 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
sense.
So that's it from me, at least as producer of this podcast. I'll be back as reporter, contributor, interviewer, chair of the monthly roundtable, and the Radio Today programme will carry on in the capable hands of Stu Clarkson. Thanks to everyone who's been so generous with their time over the last 5 years. Thank you, especially, for listening. And if you're approached by a crumbly old git with a microphone, do say hello.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.